This is the Eye on the Illini, a podcast series from IlliniGuys.com, your source for insider information on the Fighting Illini and the power behind the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular, the syndicated show, popular show, heard on 25 radio stations and in six states all across the Midwest every weekend, only on the Illini Guys Radio Network. This podcast brought to you by the great folks at Homefield Apparel, premium collegiate sportswear, amazingly comfortable, cool vintage designs, all just in time for March. Get your swag on before the tournaments begin. Homefieldapparel.com. Tell them you're an Illini guy. That's the special code, Illini Guys, and you'll get 15% off your first purchase just like that. That's homefieldapparel.com. Recently on the Sports Spectacular, we talked with College Basketball Hall of Fame writer Mike DeCourcy. You have known his work from the Sporting News, the Big Ten Network, and Fox Sports, one of the gurus of the college basketball game. It is always great to get his insights as we count down to NCAA Tournament Selection Sunday. Here's Mike DeCourcy in his recent appearance on the Sports Spectacular in this special edition of Eye on the Illini. Quick reminder, March is upon us, and that means the second annual Illini Guys $1,000 Bracket Challenge. It's free to enter, but you must be a fully paid member of IlliniGuys.com. So don't wait until the last minute to sign up, or else you won't be eligible. And don't come complaining to me. Come on in. Get your insider knowledge and get ready to flaunt your stuff with your best bracket at IlliniGuys.com. Time now for our Newsmaker Line presented by Busey Bank. He is a Hall of Famer from the Sporting News, Big Ten Network, and Fox Sports. We're so thrilled to have back on the show Mike DeCourcy. My friend, hello, and thanks again for taking some time to talk to us.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, Larry.
Appreciate that. Hey, when you and I first talked about you coming on the show, this was before last weekend, and it was before the melee in Madison. Juwan Howard, obviously, we'd spend some time here in these couple of hours talking about this, and a five-game suspension for him, one-game suspension for the three players, a fine for Wisconsin coach Greg Gard, no punishment for Joel Krabenhoff, the assistant coach. I just want to get your thoughts on, the incident and was the punishment, was it worthy?
Yeah. First, the incident itself was unfortunately, it was the product of a complete misinterpretation of how the end of a basketball game plays out. That's probably the best way I can put it. And what I mean by that is when one team has a significant lead on the other, it's kind of up to the trailing team to say, we're playing this to the end, or, okay, we're done. And to an extent, the leading team, if they keep their starters in for an exorbitant amount of time, depending on how large the lead is, I mean, if you're up 30 and you're still playing your starters in the final minute, you've probably crossed the line. But when you're up 14, I think it's not out of line to continue to play at least into the final minute, because that those leads have I was at an NCAA tournament game where a 12-point lead went in like I think 60 or 70 seconds. I saw Jason Williams. I was at the Gone in 60 Seconds game. It was a double-digit lead. I don't remember the exact number. Maryland, Duke, 2001. So you got to make sure that the lead is safe. So 48 seconds ish. Greg Gard calls timeout, rolls his subs and walk-ons in, and Michigan continues to play. Okay, great. No problem. It's your prerogative to continue to play. Okay, so then they pulled off a steal off of one of those players in the front court. Michigan did. Devontae Jones scores with 22 seconds left. He puts, I believe it was a layup. He puts that in. And at that point, it's kind of over. I mean, there's no shot clock. So Wisconsin is under no obligation to take a shot. Therefore, you can't retrieve the ball in order to score more points. So that's kind of the standard, okay, it's over moment in those kinds of games where the trailing team has chosen to compete to the end. That inside the final shot clock is kind of the okay, it's over. And Wisconsin, had they been permitted to inbound the ball with no pressure, would have walked the ball up the floor and dribbled out the final seconds. We can say that with a very high degree of certainty.
Right.
Not just taking Greg Gard's word for it, but our own experience of having watched it probably 25,000 times.
Right.
Okay, so instead, Juwan has four players in the backcourt defending. And when the ball was inbounded, at the opportunity that presented itself, they doubled the ball. So he says that's not a full court press. I don't know how he gets that, but whatever it is, it's not okay, the game is over.
Yeah.
That is him continuing to compete.
Yeah.
Again, it's his prerogative to do that.
Right.
But if he continues to compete, then the leading coach has a right to also continue to compete. And guard's explanation of, well, I'm not just going to throw my walk-ons out there and, you know, and have them get the ball taken off them in front of 20,000 people. I'm going to coach. If you're coaching, I'm coaching.
Right.
And so that angered Juwan Howard. That's, he is entitled to his anger if he wants to have it. It's not logical and it's not reasonable. But if he has that anger, then it's his job to control it. And the way to control it, there's two ways. One, just suck it in and go through the dumb handshake line and be done with it, or walk away from the handshake line.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have criticized him for it, because even though I disagreed with his reasoning, I think handshake lines are just contrived and have very little to do with sportsmanship. So I would have been fine with it. He probably would have gotten criticized for walking away from the handshake line, I'm sure. But you know what, Lair? He'd be coaching right now.
Yeah.
Because none of this stuff would have happened.
Yeah. Now, well, go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
I was going to finish by saying, like, when guard had the option, when Juwan felt compelled to make his point about how he was going to remember this, guard had the option, and it was the better option, to say, shake your head, walk away, that guy, you know, and just keep on leaving. And instead, he felt compelled to make his point about why he did what he did, mm-hmm. to try to justify himself to somebody who would, at that point, because Greg had a point to make, it was clear that Juwan's anger was irrational. So that doesn't necessarily mean he takes that irrational anger to the point that he did, but there's no point in trying to get in his way, to touch his arm, to move in front of him. None of that is productive. So the fine that Greg Gard was assessed by the Big Ten was warranted. Mm-hmm. Wasn't out of line, you know, wasn't exorbitant, was warranted. The punishment for Juwan Howard, 5 games, all 5 remaining regular season games. I think some people thought that his season should have ended. I know I read that. I read other people who said he should have been fired. I thought 5 games was appropriate. I do think that it creates the possibility of an uncomfortable moment at the Big Ten tournament. But I think that, you know, 5 games is, gosh, 2 full weeks, and then he doesn't compete until the middle to the end of the 3rd week. So that's a good 3 weeks for him to sort of assess what went wrong. And I think that that's sufficient. And if it so happened that Wisconsin were to play Michigan, then I think that would be an opportunity for them to have a show of sportsmanship, so to speak, and put this behind them. So I thought the Big Ten handled that beautifully. And for all the criticism they've taken over things going all the way back to Big Ten football season 2020, getting canceled and then restored and all that, this was an opportunity. I thought this was a big W for the Big Ten office.
What about the players throwing punches and getting 1 game? First off, for Juwan Howard, that's on you, because if there was no punch thrown until you took a swing at Krabbenhoff again with an open palm, with an open hand. But if you don't throw that, if you don't swing it at somebody, your players don't swing at somebody.
Right.
And so the 3 suspensions, 2 Michigan players, 1 Wisconsin, to me, that's on Howard. And at the same time, was that too light? Because now, if you only get 1 game for throwing a punch at somebody, what's to say that you don't throw a punch at somebody you want to have out of the game? And you say sitting out 1 game is worth it for me.
That penalty for fighting has existed since I believe it was the 88-89 season. In 1988, in the 87-88 season, Georgetown and Pitt got involved in a massive brawl that was very, very unattractive for the sport.
Right.
And it was the culmination of a lot of those kinds of things, especially in the Big East. The competition in the Big East had gotten so hot and heavy. So the Big East ADs got together and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. Anybody that gets caught fighting is out for a game now. And I don't believe they initially had this, but at a subsequent point, the entire rules committee said, okay, here's the deal. One, you get ejected for fighting, that's a game. You get ejected for fighting twice, you're done for the year. That's it. You're not playing anymore. And what, you know what happened, Larry? A lot less fighting, almost none. There's almost none. So there's a precedent for the one game suspension. What I really admired about the Big Ten office here, again, when I looked at that tape with some other people, we all saw this guy, that guy, the other guy, those three guys, and they got the exact three right guys in their examination of the tape. No collateral damage, so to speak. They got the three who were involved in swinging. I thought that they did a terrific job, as also to their credit, in communicating. Sunday afternoon, not long after what happened, here comes a statement from the office. We know we're looking at it. We're going to take care of this. Following day, here's what we did. Here's, you know, I thought they did a great job of that. It would have been very easy for them to say, okay, you know, don't bother us, you know, but they made sure that they were on top of it. I thought it was all handled really well.
Here's the other part that Illini fans will push back on is that the Big Ten has a maximum two-game suspension. That the Big Ten can only suspend somebody for two games. So Michigan comes in, as you said, to your point, communicating with the conference, with Wisconsin. They all got together and said, here's what we're going to do. And Michigan does the five games for Juwan Howard. The Big Ten does the one game for each player. A few years ago, Alan Griffin, he's a freshman for Illinois, steps on the chest of a Purdue player who's down on the ground and they had tried to block his shot and gets a two-game suspension.
Right.
So for Illinois fans, like, well, that was one act of passion. He got two games. Here's an act of passion in Musa Diabate's. There's a flurry of haymakers. Thankfully, none of them landed. He gets one game. And so I think Illinois fans are like, well, gee, wait a minute. There's this feeling out there among Illini Nation that once again, Michigan gets off easy.
Well, I don't agree with that because Wisconsin got the same penalty. And what was done a couple of years ago was a blatant disregard for the rules and for sportsmanship. This was a heated moment that, as you mentioned, was somewhat the product of the actions of his in Diabate's case, his head coach. So honestly, I mean, let's be honest, Lair. If they were playing Wisconsin on Sunday on the weekend. If the Wolverines were playing Wisconsin on the weekend and Diabate could help the Wolverines beat the Badgers, the Illini fans be like, yeah, one game, that sounds sure. Right. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's the truth. It's, you know, they're playing this weekend, so it looks, you know, oh gosh, we get to face them at full force.
Yeah,
you
know, and
I understand that, but I mean, that's the root of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, let's move on to the Big Ten race because we've got, you know, kind of, again, you know, there's just the teams here at the top, Purdue, Wisconsin, going into the weekend, tied at first, going into Thursday night, Illinois, a half game back as they take on Ohio State. What a fantastic race. Surprising Michigan isn't there. Last time you and I talked before the season, they were a top 10 team, but things haven't gone the way they, you know, we thought they would. But what a fantastic race. We thought that 15-5 might win this conference. 16-4. If those two teams can hang on, could win this race.
Hanging on's hard though, Lair.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, it's a really challenging season for everybody because the teams at the top are so good and the teams in the middle are so good and the teams at the bottom have not quit. So it's including teams at the bottom like Rutgers or in the middle taking a run at the top. So it's not what it was last year. Let's not pretend that it is or even the year before when we went all the way to 14 with all the way to 12 out of 14 with legitimate tournament contenders into at least the last week of February, maybe the month of March, early March. It's not as strong, but it's really strong. I mean, look at the standings and you're counting down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 legit tournament contenders all fighting for bids. It's conceivable they could all wind up inside, but the fact that Michigan had to play Rutgers the other night, the fact that Rutgers and Indiana face each other on what I believe is the penultimate game for both of them. Mm-hmm. I think that that will probably eliminate the possibility of getting all of them in, but they still are all alive for it and capable of getting it. And so I think that that has made the race really interesting. When people talk about great leagues, and the Big Ten is an easy target for a lot of people because of the power, the money, the alumni bases, et cetera. They look at the fact that the league has not won an NCAA championship since 2000 and dismiss it as a result. And then they compound it with last year's, frankly, failure in the tournament by the league generally and by particular teams.
Right.
But that's not what makes a league. What makes a league great is you go out, and if you're not ready to play, you might lose.
Right.
And you know, and that's what makes the Big 12 great. That's what makes the Big East great this year. The SEC would like to be the best league in the country, and it could have been, but it's not, because at the bottom, there are too many teams that can't beat you or might beat you like one time out of 20, like Mizzou got a win, you know, a big win. Mizzou's not getting those wins. Georgia's not getting those wins. Ole Miss isn't getting those wins. But in this league, Penn State is getting a few. You look at Maryland, they're getting some. Minnesota early on was getting them, and now it's kind of worn down. Nebraska's the only team in the league that isn't capable of beating a tournament contender, and has done that several times, as the others have. I think that's what makes this league special. And I don't see it abating anytime soon, and certainly not in the next 2.5 weeks.
No, not at all. I mean, it is, as we talk with Mike DeCourcy here, the Sporting News, Big Ten Network, and Fox Sports, talking college basketball. I mean, you're exactly right. In fact, this is sort of a down year for the Big 12. Normally, they are solid top to bottom, but to your point, though, they've got a team like K-State that was last place. They beat some teams. They had Iowa State was like in, I think, eighth place, and yet they're on a lot of the bracketology, field of 68s. I want to talk about the ACC. I wrote a piece for IlliniGuys.com a couple of weeks ago, just asking, is this the end of Duke and the end of the ACC? Obviously, things are cyclical. The ACC will come back. But right now, when you take Krzyzewski out of the mix here at the end of the season and you lose Roy Williams last year and you're about to lose Jim Boeheim, is at some point has to retire. I mean, it's, you know, he's almost 80, and at some point you feel like he's probably going to give it up. When you do, that is, but when you, among them, I did the math, it's like 9 NCAA championships and like 21 Final Fours among those three. And when you take all the other coaches there, you've got the one title and the one Final Four with Tony Bennett and Virginia in 2019. My argument with Duke is that I'm not sure, and we won't know until he gets in there, does John Shire have the chops to do, is he a Mike Krzyzewski 2.0? It's so hard to replace a legend. And we haven't seen Krzyzewski assistants have great success elsewhere. And so the ACC right now is where it's one of those that, you know, normally this is one that a league to watch. They're really not right now.
You know, about 5 to 7 years ago, I couldn't pin down the exact time frame. The SEC went through a period of literally getting 3 bids, 4 bids out of 14. They've had out of 12 to 14. I can't remember exactly when but they were right around 14 teams, probably early part of the last decade. And they were getting 3 bids, 4 bids, 5 bids. And they got together and they said, this isn't good enough. We can do better. We've got all this money. We've got, you know, SEC football money to burn. Why are we so bad? And they went and they hired Mike Trangisi as a consultant, and he helped with their scheduling. And in some cases, I believe, helped with vetting coaches. What do you think? Yes or no? Is he good? Is he not? They hired Dan Leibovitz as their basketball commissioner, and he did a terrific job as well. And we've seen, although I mentioned before, some of the teams at the bottom of the league are struggling. We've seen resurgences at Alabama, at Auburn. You know, Kentucky has been there all along. We've seen Arkansas make a huge jump. And so it has made a difference. If those if they hadn't had those meetings and they hadn't made those moves and they hadn't gotten guys into the league like Nate Oates and Muss, it'd be Kentucky kicking everybody's tail, and they'd be getting three bids or four bids or whatever. So that's what the ACC needs. Yeah. This is a flex point for the ACC. As you mentioned, all those coaches. You didn't mention Leonard Hamilton. He's in his 70s.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like it. He looks like he's 25, but he's in his 70s.
He's the Dorian Gray of basketball, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
The guy never ages.
Exactly. Yeah.
I told somebody, reminded somebody, he was an assistant on the 78 Kentucky team that won the title, and people didn't believe me. They had to go look it up. They went, "Oh, you were right." I'm like, "This guy's ancient." Yeah, there's no question.
It's crazy.
Great coach. Yeah.
And then Jim Larrañaga as well. Yeah,
in the 70s.
And Mike Bray is, I think he's my age. So there will be a changing of the guard to some degree. I don't know how long Mike wants to coach, but let's say it's another 10 years. That's still, that's still not that far out. So every team in that league has to think forward. And then there are other than Virginia, which knows exactly where it is and wants to be, you look at teams like Pitt, which is struggling so badly. NC State is struggling. Wake is another team that's set, but there's so many that need to move forward one way or the other. And so I don't think that I'm willing to say that it's over, but they need direction.
Yeah.
They need some vision. Now, they hired a brilliant commissioner a year ago. We know very well from the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. And Jim Phillips will help make this better. I don't have any doubt. I fully believe that he will do the things that I talked about in some way, shape, or form. Maybe he's the Mike Trangisi. I can believe that. He'd do great if he has the time.
Yeah, yeah. He's outstanding. You mentioned NC State's another one. Kevin Keats, a lot of buzz that he may be done into the season. It's hard to believe it's been five seasons already. And like you said, NC State, like some other schools, see an opportunity right now where there is that void at the top. With UNC struggling this year and Hubert Davis's first year, Shire is coming on. Where is Duke going to go? There is that chance to kind of edge your way in with some of the blue bloods. Hey, before I let you go, I want to talk about your picks for Coach of the Year and Player of the Year. I think we've got some outstanding candidates for both. Coach of the Year usually kind of goes by, doesn't get talked a lot about a lot. We've had some great coaches do some great things at Arizona, Providence, make an argument for Illinois and Brad Underwood with what he's had to navigate with all the injuries. And Player of the Year, I mean, there are six or seven really strong candidates that I don't think that we can lose with picking any of those young men.
There are going to be players on my second All-America team that it's going to be agonizing for me to send the email to the SID saying your guy's on second team.
Yeah,
because your guy's a first team All-American that you can't unless the votes come in from my panel and it's tied. I can't, and I'm not expanding that. It's not right.
Right.
But if they come in, it's tied, then we'll have seven first team All-Americans, but most likely we'll have five first team All-Americans and two to four who should be. That's how deep in really talented college basketball players we are this year. The gain for the evolution of the NBA close to done 3 years, and maybe even thinking about a fourth. That's just the way it's changed. So then you have Oscar Tshiebwe, you have Kofi, and then you have these great dynamic wings who emerged out of almost nowhere, like Keegan Murray and Johnny Davis. It's a tremendous group of players. It really is. And then you have the freshmen, the very few freshmen who are making a significant impact, like Banchero at Duke or Jabari Smith or Chet Holmgren, guys who are making an impact are terrific players. So it's going to be very difficult to choose. I haven't, as of last weekend, my list began with Oscar Tshiebwe and followed with Johnny Davis. I haven't got, I'm not going to even think about whether to change that list until we get to through another full week of games. And I really don't have to make up my mind until the last, you know, until after the regular season or whatever. And Naismith, I vote for ours, obviously. And then the sporting news, and then Naismith, I'm a voter also. So Naismith gives a little more time. So we'll see. Coach of the year for me at this point still has to probably finish off winning the Big East championship, which he can do if he wins one of his final two games. Ed Cooley, what he's done at Providence, miraculous is a strong word, but ridiculous maybe is a good word. This is true, Larry. They have eight players in their rotation. Out of those eight players, one of them was ranked number 48 in his class by 24/7 Sports. One was ranked number 100. Those are their top 100 players on their team that now is 23-3 and first in the Big East. Two top 100. Then everybody else is ranked lower than 200. And four of them, well, technically aren't ranked lower than 200 because they weren't ranked at all. They have four unranked players in their eight player rotation. And 24/7 Sports goes all the way to 400. I mean, that's your rotation, and that's what you win 23 out of 26 games. I think that what's happened in Arizona with Tommy Lloyd is impressive as heck. What Mark Adams has done at Texas Tech has been remarkable. What Scott Drew has been able to do with losing, you know, 4/5 of a championship starting lineup, mm-hmm. is really amazing, and he probably deserves some a significant congratulations for that. But I just right now think that what Ed Cooley has done at Providence is being totally overlooked. When I hear others in the national media discuss this, they start with those others that I mentioned. They start with Tommy Lloyd. They start with Mark Adams. If you want to give him an award for coaching rookie of the year, have at it. But for Ed to be doing what he's doing at Providence, it's going to take a lot to pry my vote away from him.
Yeah, it's you're exactly right. It is what he has done and consistently. And to your point, and this is somebody who got zero media buzz, he nor his program, and started from scratch, if you will. And yet here they are. They have been outstanding. Mike, as always, we have taken up way too much of your time. But as we all know, anyone who's listened to us on podcasts and on the show here before, when you and I start talking, we're going to go a while. Mike, I appreciate your time, and good luck. Look for you in Indianapolis at the Big Ten tournament, and have fun here in March.
All right. I will look forward to seeing you.
Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News as he appeared on the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular on the Illini Guys Radio Network. Special thanks to Homefield Apparel. Vintage designs just introduced in time to root on your Illini in the NCAA tournament. Get 15% off your first purchase by using the code IlliniGuys on homefieldapparel.com. That's homefieldapparel.com. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll see you next time on Eye on the Illini.